Testament, chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. And we're going to take the time to read through this entire passage together. And then we want to spend the remainder of the time talking about this passage, Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." I think this parable gives people as much problem as any of the parables of Jesus. The man was a rascal, just an absolute rascal. But not only was he a rascal, so were his master's debtors. They were all complicit in the rascality. But the master commends him for being such a rascal. And when you read that part, what? Did I read that correctly? He's commended. The guy's a dishonest rascal. The debtors are dishonest rascals. And by the way, the master seems to enjoy that. He commends him for being so dishonest, such a rascal. What in the world is Jesus talking about here? Well, whatever he's talking about, there's a lesson that we need to learn. And it is an important lesson. Actually, Jesus brought from this four lessons. And when we get down to the end, I think we can see why Jesus brought these four lessons. That's all I want us to do, is to see the four lessons that Jesus brought from this. Obviously, that's what he wants us to get from this. But I want to see, how is it that Jesus can take a story about a dishonest rascal and turn this into a lesson about how we are supposed to use our material possessions? Well, why then did the Lord, why did the Master commend the unjust steward? What I want to do now is just go through the passage and talk about it as we go and see if we can see what Jesus is talking about. And then just see the lessons that Jesus himself brings from it, see if we can understand what the lessons are, and if we can apply those to our own lives. And that's really all I want to do with the passage, that is what Jesus did with it. He also said to his disciples, now this is a lesson that Jesus wants his disciples to get. That's us, isn't it? So this is a lesson for us. "There was a certain rich man who had a steward." Now we would say today he had a manager. And by the way, I think the New American Standard Version renders it that way, that he was the manager of his goods. And this was a very common arrangement then, and by the way, still a common arrangement now. Probably this was a man that had a lot of land, because what he's being paid in is what's called kind, and it would be very, very similar to the kind of farming that used to be done in Arkansas and other places in the South. Back in the time when you had sharecroppers, you know, after the end of slavery, and would sharecroppers would farm the land, particularly over the flat land of East Arkansas. And it'd be, if anybody here, and there are probably several of you, they're familiar with the old sharecropping arrangements and how those were carried out in East Arkansas and other parts of the South before everything became mechanized and didn't have to have that kind of arrangement, then this is probably very similar to what we have here. And a rich man that had a lot of land would probably not manage the land himself, but he would turn it over to a manager to do this for him. I have a cousin. I'm talking about Texas right now. I have a cousin who lives down in southwest Texas, where I was born, where my mother's family's from. That would be very similar. I hope he's not a rascal like this fellow was, but he would be very similar. He manages 119,000 acres of ranch land. He doesn't own it himself. He manages it for a rich Mexican. But that rich Mexican owns that land in southwest Texas. And he has to... Now, Stappy, my cousin, has a degree in ranch management from Soil Ross University in Alpine, Texas. You have to know West Texas to have any idea what I'm talking about there. But the point is, he is equipped to manage what goes on there, which is primarily raising cattle to take off to market to sell for the beef. And so he manages that big spread of land, 119,000 acres in southwest Texas. But that is managed entirely, so it's a big spread. I've been down there to visit Stappy several years ago and saw him as he was preparing calves to take out onto the pasture for a year. And I won't describe what all he did to those calves, but the animal rights activists have been very upset. But nonetheless, then turned those out onto the pasture for a year. And you think, boy, Stappy's getting rich off this. But no, he wasn't. Stappy lived in a very humble place. Kind of an old broken down, see, he won't hear this, so I'll say this, kind of an old broken down place that Stappy and his wife lived in, but he was managing a huge spread. But see, he was doing that in order to benefit the man who owned the property. And this is what a steward or a manager does. He manages somebody else's property, somebody else's goods, but he doesn't do it for his own benefit. He does it for the benefit of the one who owns it. And that's the whole thing about stewardship. A steward has to be dependable. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2, the Apostle Paul, after talking about that he was a steward of the manifold grace of God, says, "Moreover, in stewards it is necessary that one be found faithful." That word faithful means dependable, that you can depend on that person, and he's honest, and he's also able, and he will manage it in a way that the owner of the property will benefit from that. So we are all stewards of everything that we have, of everything that we own, of our ability, of our time, of our material possessions. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10, the Apostle Peter tells us, "As each one has received the gift, even so minister it to one another as good stewards," good managers, "of the manifold, the many-faceted grace of God." So whatever you have, if you have time on your hands, that is by the grace of God. God gave you that time. If you have abilities, God gave you those abilities. And so rather than gloating in what ability you have, use them in the service of God. If you have money, if you have material possessions, whatever it is, those were given to you by the Lord, and you are a steward of those things. Those things don't actually belong to us ultimately. They ultimately belong to God. In 1 Chronicles chapter 29, this is 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 14. When David, toward the end of his life, when Solomon had already been anointed king, And David had already made the plans for the temple, and he was getting the materials together for the temple. And he says concerning that in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 14, "But who am I, and who are these my people, that we should be able to give so willingly of that which you have given to us?" And then he goes ahead to say, "And all of it is yours." So actually, when we give something, if you give to the church on the first day of the week, you're simply giving the Lord a part of what belongs to Him anyway. It came from Him. Now, this doesn't just apply to giving to the church. It applies to all giving that is in God's service. And it doesn't apply just to giving of money. It applies to giving of our time. It applies to giving of our abilities. Whatever it is, it all came from God, and it all belongs to God, and we're simply returning to Him a part of what is His anyway. So David recognized that true principle. That's the principle of stewardship. So there was a rich man who had a steward. And this steward had an accusation was brought to that against him, was brought to the rich man, that this man was wasting his good. Now that, of course, is the death knell for a steward. If you're the manager of another man's property, and that man gets word that you're wasting the stuff that you have to manage for him, then your management's over with it. In fact, that happened to Sandy and me, not to us, we saw it, when we were living in northern New York, and there was a couple who were managing an apartment complex we were living in. And apparently, well, they were bought out by a company, and the company didn't want them. And I mean, the very day they were booted out, they did not have time to, you know, get everything together. That day, out of here. And of course, that's the way it's done in management by corporations. They don't want them hanging around and doing some harm or getting some information they don't want, so you're out today. And that's what's happened. The corporation did not think, apparently, they were managing that property correctly, and instantly they were out, they were gone that day. And a lot of people are upset about that, but that's just how business works. And so this is what happened. The steward, an accusation is brought against him. He's wasting his master's money, his goods. So he called him and said, "What is this that I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship. Lay open the books." And by the way, you better not have any second set of books. Lay open the books and let's see what you've been doing. Because it's been told me that you're wasting my money, or you're wasting the things that should be coming to me. For you can no longer be steward. So his job's taken away from him, and the man has no way to make a living. So then the steward, now I do admire this about the steward. He had the good sense to sit down and to take an assessment and to make a reasonable assessment. I don't admire what kind of a man he was, but at least he made a reasonable assessment of the situation and the situation he was in. He sent the steward to say within himself, "What shall I do? Because my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig." Now, that may refer to farming. And by the way, in Uganda, if a man is going to go out and farm, he's going to go out and dig. Because they just have a hole and they dig, and that's their farming. They dig in the ground, and the men and the women alike get out there and dig in the ground. That's their farming. Well, so they're going to go out and dig. They're going to go out and farm. Probably that's what he referred to, but his point is, for some reason, I don't know whether it was he thought it was too good or whether he wasn't physically able, but for some reason he could not do physical labor. So he says, "I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg." So he thought he was too good for that. So what are you going to do? You can't work physically. You're unable for some reason, and you're ashamed to beg. Oh, I know what I'm going to do. And now he shows, by the way, that his master was right for getting him out of the stewardship. "I have resolved what to do, that when I put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." He's going to bring people in debt to him. But not only in debt to him, they were going to be complicit with the crime, so they couldn't possibly tell them, could they? Because they were part of the crime too. So both in debt to him, so that they would be obligated to do things that were to benefit to him, but also since they were complicit in the crime, they couldn't possibly tell because they were guilty along with him. So, you know, he's a shrewd fellow, and that's the point that Jesus is making. So he says, "I resolve what to do when I put out of the stewardship and receive me into their houses." So he called every one of his master's debtors to him. Now, he's going back to this on a large scale. Maybe this was a large place and had a lot of tenant farmers. and they would be paying to the owner of the land a part of the crops. See, just exactly the way sharecropping was done in generations past right here in Arkansas. It would be exactly parallel to that. And so he called every one of his master's debtors and said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil. I read that measure be about 9 gallons. So it was a pretty large debt that he owed. And that would be an olive oil. And so this man had a large orchard of olives. I guess they call it an orchard. I really don't know. but it had a grove of olive trees. And he owed a lot of olive oil to the man that owned that. And so he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Now he cut the man's debt in half. And in doing that, now who did the man owe? Now he didn't legally owe that dishonest rascal anything, but he was now beholden to him, we would say, and at the same time he was complicit to the crime, so he was brought under obligation to this man. Then he said another, "And how much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, "Take your bill and write 80. So this man owed 100 bushels of wheat, and he strikes 20 bushels off of it. And so now he's brought also under obligation to this dishonest, this unjust steward. And at the same time, since he's complicit to the crime, there's nothing he can do about it as far as telling what's happened. So the master, now here's the thing that just absolutely blows my mind, and probably yours too. So the master commended the unjust steward. Why did the master, by the way, now this is talking about the master in the parable, and so that makes him a rascal too, because he appreciated the shrewdness of this fellow. Okay, so everybody in the parable is a rascal. And maybe one thing we could learn from that is there's a lot of rascals out in the world. And that's true too, isn't it? There's a lot of people who are willing to do whatever it takes to make a dollar. Okay? And it, regardless of what it does to somebody else, if they think they can get away with it, they're willing to do it. That's the way the world operates. And I do believe that is implicit in what Jesus is talking about. This is the way people in the world operate. And when he talks about the sons of this world, he's talking about people who just operate in this world and have no interest in the spiritual realm. No, don't even pretend to be a Christian. Those people are like this guy. They'll do whatever they think they can get away with in order to make some money, regardless of what it does to somebody else. But here's the point. And anybody who has dealt in business has seen this, if you have your eyes open, and I have dealt in business, and I think most of you have, you have seen that there are people, when you see what they're willing to do, you're amazed at how dishonest they are. And you wonder, do they even have a conscience? And then when you see the brazenness of what they do, you wonder, wow. And then when you think, boy, now, you know, I don't ever want to try to do business with them because they're too shrewd. You know, I want to do what's right, and they're going to do what's wrong, and I know they're going to do what's wrong. They amaze me with their shrewdness, how they're able to get away with things and to make it work to their benefit in this world. And that's the only thing that Jesus is commending about this. That there are people who in this world, with no thought of eternity, with no thought of going to heaven, with no thought of the Lord and pleasing the Lord, with only a thought of trying to make more in this world, there are people who are amazing in their shrewdness in their business dealings. And this man was amazing in his shrewdness in his business dealings. And Jesus wants us to be equally shrewd, but not in our business dealings, but in our use of the material wealth. So it is not to our, now listen carefully, it's not to our material benefit, it is to our spiritual benefit. And he tells us how to do it. Now, if we're using material wealth to our spiritual benefit, we will not be dishonest with it, okay? So that's not the point. He said the only thing that Jesus is commending here is the man is shrewd. He's shrewd in the realm that he's concerned with, the business realm, here and now. Now he's saying, now you disciples, you be equally shrewd about spiritual things. And he tells us how to do it. Now listen carefully. And in the process, he tells us how to be good stewards rather than bad. Do you want to be a good manager? A good steward of those things that God has given to you? In this parable of the unjust steward, Jesus tells us how to be good stewards of everything. Yes, our material wealth, but remember, everything we have is from God. It all belongs to God. Our time, our ability, as well as the material possessions that we have, whether it's in money, land, or whatever. Everything that we have, everything that's a part of us is from God. Belongs to God. We are His stewards. We are His managers. Using that in His benefit. All right, let's see how He tells us to do this. All right. He says, I say to you, let me back up. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more, now sons of this world, people only concerned with here and now, are more shrewd in their generation. Now, one translation renders that in their own kind, among the people that are like them. That probably is how the word generation is being used there. They're more shrewd in their business, even other people like them, than are the sons of light. The sons of light, that's disciples of Christ. You're talking disciples. That's people who are Christians who want to go to heaven, who are living, moving in the realm of light, where we are enlightened by the gospel. All right, so that's us. Sometimes we let people, the world, put us to shame in their shrewdness in material things compared to our shrewdness in using material things in order to go to heaven. All right, now let's see the lesson that he gives. I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Mammon, now mammon is actually a word from the Chaldeans. From the Chaldeans, from the Babylonians, that the Jews had borrowed. And it was the god of wealth. Okay, and so Jesus uses that term mammon simply to mean material things, wealth. He calls it unrighteous for several reasons, probably. One is material wealth is deceptive. People think that it is dependable. If I have enough money in the bank, I'm secure. Well, you know, there's a lot of people right now. This is a good time to get this lesson. There's a lot of people right now who thought that they were secure because they had a home that they were paying on and they had money built up in that home that was a lot more than what they owed on it, and they thought they were in good shape. Okay? And then some of those dishonest stewards, you know, were flipping houses and all that stuff. And the housing market collapsed, and now there's folks that are underwater. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Whereas before, they were in real good shape. And it's not anything they did wrong. They were doing what was honest, just making their payments on their house that they lived in, just trying to get ahead a little bit in this world. And they found out, you know, material things are not dependable. Is there any, my dad used to say, you know, land is always going to be around. So he invested in the land. But just before he died, the price of land collapsed in Arkansas. That was 1987. And my mother was left holding land that was worth very little money. It was worth maybe about a fourth or less, fifth of what it had been worth before, because there was a collapse in land prices in 1987 at the time my dad died. So yeah, they're not making any more land, that's true, but that doesn't mean land's always worth the same or there's always going to be going up. There's not anything in this world, material things, that are secure. People place their trust in those things. And I don't care whether it's stock or whether it's gold or whether it's land or houses, whatever it is. Nothing in this world is secure. It just deceives people into thinking there's security there. And people will do most anything, just like this unjust steward will, to get those things. And so those are reasons. There's probably other reasons. But those are reasons that mammon, material wealth, is unrighteous. It's not unrighteous in itself, but it leads people to expect things that they should not expect, at least people to do things that they should not do. But he says, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. Now there's the most direct lesson from this unjust steward that we can learn. The unjust steward used his master's wealth to benefit himself so that he had a place to live when he was put out of the stewardship, when he ceased being the manager. Now we are to use, this is good stewardship. Here's how you manage the things God has given you so that you're a good steward, a good manager of the manifold grace of God. Use it in such a way that when you die and you no longer have anything here, they will receive you into an eternal home. How do you do that? Now this is the essence. This is what good stewardship is. How do you do that? Well, Jesus tells us that. In Matthew chapter 25, we'll just take a part of this passage. Look there at verses 34 through 40 of Matthew chapter 25. This is the judgment scene. Then shall the king say to those on his right hand, come, now this is Matthew 25 beginning of verse 34. Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous shall say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? Or when did we see you naked and clothe you, or a stranger and take you in? Or when did we see you sick and visit you, or in prison and come to you? Then the Lord shall say to them, inasmuch as you've done it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it to me. When we use our material wealth to benefit those who are God's people, who are less fortunate than us, who are down and out through no fault of their own, in doing that, we are being shrewd in our use of unrighteous mammon. We're being good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Listen carefully, please. Good stewardship. And I'm going to go back to this because the rest of that, I'm just preaching through the passage and the chart's not going to make much sense. I'm just preaching through the passage. Good stewardship is not putting back money in the bank and seeing how much you can amass. Good stewardship is not using material wealth for the things that you enjoy or that I enjoy. Good stewardship is using material wealth to the benefit of the service of God and to the benefit of others so that they will receive us into an everlasting home. Now, nobody on this earth can literally receive us in an everlasting home. But by using our material wealth to further the kingdom of God, by using our material wealth to help those who are less fortunate than us. Now, I'm not talking about giving to bums that come along and are not deserving. I'm talking about God's people who are truly deserving and through no fault of their own are down and out. Good stewardship is the use of our material wealth to benefit those who are less fortunate and to help them out of their tight spot. And so he says, that's the first thing. That's the first lesson. Use your material wealth so they will gain to you an eternal home when you fail. Alright, then he says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. Now that's a general principle. What do we do with our little children when they're still quite young? Now, sometimes people will give them an allowance. Some people make their children work, do a little bit of chores around the house to receive money. But then we want to see how they manage that money. And if they can't manage them a dollar, you're not going to give them $5. If they take their dollar every week and go out and get ice cream as quickly as they can, then you feel, all right, they don't know how to manage money. They need some lessons, and they're not going to get any more money until you teach them how to manage this money. And it's just a general principle they all live by. He who is faithful in that which is least is faithful also much. Now, the least here, that which is least, is material wealth. That's what he's talking about. He who is faithful in that which is least is faithful also much. He who is unjust in what is least is unjust also much. Therefore, If you've not been faithful to the unrighteous mammon, if you haven't used your material wealth, not hoarding it up, not for your own selfish pleasures, but to benefit others and to spread abroad the kingdom of God. If you haven't used it for that reason, is God going to give you the true riches? Now, what are the true riches? Well, we know, of course, that the true riches is the spiritual things. We in class this morning, we noticed 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 18, our light affliction was but for a moment works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. There's the true riches. We don't look at the things which are seen. Paul, same passage, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. We don't look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, the things which are not seen are eternal. Don't look at things you can see. Look at things you cannot see. Don't look at the material, look at the spiritual. The material is temporary. The spiritual is eternal. And thus, we use material wealth in such a way to gain an eternal home. Then we're being good stewards. And if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Now, the things we have here, they belong to God. They don't belong to us. But if we make it to heaven, when we make it to heaven, that's eternal. It's not going to be taken away from us. It will belong to us. But who's going to give us that? If we don't use what is given to us here that belongs to God wisely while we're here, no servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, that seems contradictory, doesn't it? He's been talking to us about using mammon. Now he says, you can't let mammon be your master. If you do, then you can't serve God, because you can't have two masters. And those two are diametrically opposed to each other. But you know, it's not out of place at all, is it? It shows us that the lesson has to do with the spiritual realm, not the material realm. And we must let God be our master, serving Christ, not money. Good stewardship is not how much money can I set aside in the bank or investments. Good stewardship is not, look at all the adult toys that I have. Look at all that I have that I enjoy, that I have fun with. I have done a good job of saving my money through the years, and now I can enjoy it. Now, the world looks on that as good stewardship, but the Lord doesn't. Good stewardship is using our material wealth, our ability, our time in God's service, and helping those who are deserving but less fortunate, so that we can gain a home in heaven. And if we're not doing that, I don't care how much we've saved in the bank, I don't care how nice a house we have, I don't care how many adult toys we have, if we're not doing that, we're not good stewards. I hope and pray that we all are good stewards of the manifold grace of God, and will be able to go to heaven as the result of using the things that God has given us to His benefit, not to our own benefit. You're doing the right thing in pulling out your songbook and open it to number 283, please. Number 283. There may be those in the audience today who need to make your life right with the Lord. We have several visitors with us, and I failed to say anything about that earlier. I apologize. We're glad to have our visitors with us and hope that you will come back. But there may be somebody here that needs to make your life right with God, either by becoming a Christian or as a Christian to confess sins and have us pray with you and for you. If there's anything that we can help you with, any spiritual need that you have, if you'll let us know, we'll do what we can to assist you. We invite you to come while together we stand and while we sing.